I lost my job.
Where can I sleep?
Why is this happening to me?
I have nowhere to go.
How will we pay rent?
This is The Science of Poverty, every Saturday, 4 to 5 p.m., here on KYRS, Medical Lake, Spokane, 88.1, 92.3 FM.
This is KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1, 92.3 FM. Welcome once again to The Science of Poverty, where we talk all things poverty, homelessness, and our vulnerable populations here in Spokane, Washington, and everywhere else. The Science of Poverty receives support from the Smith Barbieri Progressive Fund, a charitable foundation. Information at smithbarbieri.com. I'm Jesse, your host.
And Sarah as well.
Welcome once again. Today we're doing something kind of different. We're talking about what to do and what happens when you first become homeless, what to expect, how you will be treated, what are the resources everyone's talking about, and how do you get out of such a horrible situation?
Or at least how do you start?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. First off, homelessness, it's such a cliche term. I mean, you know, it happens. It happens more often than none, but yet... You know, you have people who don't want to talk about it. It's a taboo situation, and you have all these negative connotations that are attached to it. I have this list, and I got this list from cracked.com of all the websites to get information from. But I Googled it, and you know, cracked.com, you know, they're funny, but they had some interesting things. And some interesting ideas, and you know, which kind of fall in with what you know this program is about right now. The first thing, what to expect when you become homeless. It doesn't take too much to become homeless.
No, it certainly does not. One injury, and that can destroy all of your resources and leave you with nothing.
Well, we have what's called push factors into homelessness. Mm-hmm. And every time I go out and, you know, give training about, you know, poverty and homelessness to, you know, these schools around the area, certain, you know, programs, the Rotary Club, I've talked there, this list keeps getting bigger and bigger. And what a push factor is a factor that pushes one into homelessness. And right now it's anywhere from 12 to, you know, 13 items long. Granted, you know, there's more, but these are the main points. One of them is the obvious, losing your job.
Right. And unfortunately, a lot of the time that happens through an injury. And if you sustain that injury on the job, sometimes there's worker retraining available through the L&I insurance. But more often than not, there isn't. And what if you're injured when you're not on the job? There's nothing.
It sounds easy. I mean, okay, I'll just go get L&I, or I'll go get unemployment. You know, each aspect has a turnaround time, has a specific amount of time. I mean, yeah, it takes time to apply for unemployment.
And through none of those resources, which don't get me wrong, those are very, very fantastic resources when you find yourself in that situation, but none of them are going to compensate for your full income level, which means if you're living paycheck to paycheck to support your family, you're no longer able to do that, even if those resources are available to you.
And they're also finite. Finite, right?
Finite,
not forever.
Right. There's a set amount of time.
Unemployment. And you're thinking, you know, right when it happens, well, I'll go to the Social Security office. You know, I'll get disability, or, you know, I'm telling you right now, these programs are the most difficult and stringent programs to, you know, they're not meant for an emergency. I mean, it's not like a you can do it and the next day you get funding. And, you know, just like what you were saying, Sarah.
Right.
I mean, the funding's not, gosh, it's like maybe an eighth of what you need to survive. And also, if I remember right, and this may be dated information, unemployment, it depends on the job that you have or had. You know, if it was a retail job, I'm not totally sure about the formula, but it's, again, you know, I'll have to post this on the website. And what we mean by the website is on kyrs.org. You go on kyrs.org and you look under shows. you find our show, The Science of Poverty, and you'll see that, you know, what we've been posting and all these things that we've been telling you we'll post, and it's going to be right there for you. Easy access. So, yeah, all these, you know, these quick fixes aren't as quick as you think.
And they don't fix as much as we would hope either.
I wish. I hear a lot of people telling me the same thing. You know, I'm homeless and, you know, I lost my job. I'm trying to get in on these programs and, you know, I'm living with relatives or living at the shelter down the street. And it takes time. It takes time. Like, consequently, time is your worst enemy.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, by the time those resources do come through for you, keep in mind that sometimes it's not just a couple months. Sometimes it can be a couple years, especially if you're looking at a permanent disability and receiving, you know, the disability income. That can take years for that claim to actually go through and for you to actually start seeing that paycheck. And in that time, you have no resources. What's the first thing that I'm going to do, I think of, when I'm in that situation where I don't have an income anymore, I can't support myself? I'm going to start selling what I own that's valuable that I can get money for to continue supporting myself. That's not going to last very long. So by the time you finally get those resources coming in, you may have nothing left in this world.
So your mind, your entire mindset changes. As opposed to going home and, well, I can do this later. You know, I can sit down and relax. That's not there anymore.
That comfort isn't there anymore.
And so that peace of mind goes away real quick. Bear in mind, I've been through this. I've been homeless, and unfortunately, I've slept on the streets before. I've known people who, you know, who've gone through this many, many times. You got the chronic homelessness. You got the ones that, you know, the newbies, I suppose you can call them.
Right.
And it's just this whole mindset, everything changes. Your priorities go to, you know, your future, to the survival right now. And the most interesting aspect of this is you're not just thinking about your survival right now. You're thinking about your future and how you are going to fix that. So how will you fix that? We're going to try to, you know, touch up on some of these questions, and albeit they're going to be difficult. And I would like to ask you folks who are listening to be open-minded and try to put yourself in their shoes. Okay, let's go through the list. Okay, you find out that you lost a job, or you have to leave the state because you have a significant other stalking you and harassing you.
Which, again, that leads into that another one of those large push factors is domestic violence. You're fleeing for your safety, but not everyone has something or somewhere to flee to.
Yeah, so
they just go.
So you're living off the grid, relatively. And what I mean by living off the grid, your Facebook goes away. You have no, you know, full-time access to your Facebook. You have no full-time access to the computer. You can't pay your phone bill. So how are you going to, you know, call and keep in touch with relatives, your employer? That's the first thing that goes away. The first part of this bastion that keeps you up. The communication goes away. You're off the grid. Now let's talk about the certain things that are affected by living off the grid. We had just talked about communicating. Okay. How are you going to communicate with your employer? That's going to be difficult.
And not only that, but the fear of going to work, knowing that person who you're looking to hide from and avoid and keep yourself safe from knows where your place of employment is. You're not going to want to go back there. So even getting to work, let alone keeping in contact with your employer, is just not really a question anymore.
Okay. Well, normally when you lose a job, you have no money for the rent. And at this point in time, you have a vehicle. Okay. And, oh, well, you got insurance and you got gas. So, okay, you can still try to, you know, try to keep your job. You can go and you could, you know, lay your head at the, you know, the shelter down the street or stay with friends, which also I might add is a finite resource. Any transitional housing, I believe, is only 90 days. And they do that. They do enforce that at most of these shelters here in Spokane. So you got 90 days. You got 90 days to put your head on the pillow and, okay, you're working hard, you're keeping up, you know, you're trying to pay your phone bill and you're getting a job. So let's think what else happens. You have, I mean, you're going to work and they're going to realize you're homeless. And more times than none, as bad as this sounds, you will be mistreated. You will be mistreated by a lot of people only because there's a misunderstanding of what poverty actually is. All right, let's run down. Let's go down this. This what to expect when you're homeless. I have this whole list in front of me. Having a job won't save you. Having a job won't save you. That's curious. That's really curious because you hear more times than none people saying, well, just go get a job. Go get a job. And, you know, it depends on each person's situation. If they, you know, if they have the education to change, you know, change professions, or if they, you know, it's difficult. How, I mean, if they can get funding, you know, from the government, a Pell Grant, which may be based on their income. And so you're thinking and your gears are turning. And again, I mean, you could see everything just slowly building up on yourself.
Well, and not only that, but everyone's, oh, well, go flip burgers at one of these fast food restaurants. They pay, you know, almost $10 an hour. If you do that for a couple months, you'll be able to save up enough money. You're living in a shelter. You don't pay rent right now. What's the problem? Well, the problem, I believe, comes in where, okay, so you've been homeless for some period of time, let's say a month, and you actually are able to get a job. But then, as Jesse said, you've only got 2 months left in that transitional housing and you have to leave. So is that 2 months going to be enough working for minimum wage, even saving every amount of money you can, not talking about the money you're paying for your insurance if you were able to continue your cell phone coverage or service, gas for your car to get yourself to and from work, or a bus pass to get to and from work. You're still paying for all those things. And to get into an apartment or a house, that costs usually first and last month's rent plus a $500+ deposit. You're not going to be able to save that amount of money in 2 months. You're not, even when you're not paying rent, because you still have other responsibilities.
Unrealistic.
And it's very unrealistic. Very.
Again, I mean, time is your enemy. And, you know, more times than not, you see these people on the streets. And, I went through it. You know, you fall into despair. And then all of a sudden, you know, you don't want to do this, you don't want to do that. You're waiting on Social Security, you're waiting on other things. And then you have all this time on your hands, time that you used to utilize, you know, either spending with your family, taking trips, doing what you enjoy, which could be, you know, painting and, woodworking. It could be anything. Sitting in front of the TV. I mean, that's a pastime, playing on Xbox 360. That's all gone. So how do you fill that, you know, fill in the blanks? Normally one person would, you know, a person would say, well, you could, you know, that's more time to, you know, to work your system. Not when you are on anyone, you know, everyone else's schedule. So, okay. So we went through having a job won't save you. Okay. Unless you have like a, you know, awesome bosses and, you know, and people who are willing to really, really pull in for you. But that's really rare.
or that support system that I love talking about, because for someone like me, I think, okay, if I find myself in that position, guess what? I'm knocking on family's door. My sister, whether she wants to or not, is going to put me up, right? Well, not everyone has that. Think again of those domestic violence situations. You've fled your home. You're gone. You're maybe in another state. You don't know anybody there. You don't have a support system there for you. You don't have anyone to lean on. And there are a lot of people who do not have anyone to lean on.
That support system is vital. And, you know, quite a few times I run into people on the street who don't have support systems, or they're trying to develop that support system. I think that is the single most important thing in getting somebody off the street, is having that support system. That's something that keeps, you know, keeps creeping in to every radio show we have, Sarah.
I almost make it, something said and it buzzes into my head, and it's such an important piece of a person's success in life overall. Especially, I mean, it's easy to do well and think you can do it all on your own and be okay when things are going well. But the moment they're not, if you don't have a support system, it is exponentially more difficult to bring yourself back up from a hard position.
If you're just now tuning in, you're listening to The Science of Poverty on KYRS at 8.1, 92.3 FM. Yes, that's where your dial is. We talk all things poverty, homelessness, and our vulnerable populations here in Spokane, Washington, and sometimes everywhere else. When I came up with the idea of this show, excuse me, and you all know that, you know, my throat, I'm always clearing my throat. But when I came up with this whole idea of the show, poverty and homelessness and our vulnerable populations, talking about the subject is scary, and it's not very popular. It's not a very cool thing to go through, just like what we're talking about.
It's not a comfortable or easy thing to think about either. We always, any of those, it's sort of like death. When we think about death or talk about death, it's always referring to another person. We don't talk about when we die, or it's not something we like to put ourselves into the context of that conversation.
Well, I think within our culture, I mean, the emphasis is on us, on me, me, me.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if the other person don't get it, okay, well then, oh well for him. He can go suck a lemon. All right. Well, it's, I'm trying to be nice here. But the me, me, me thing, when that emphasis is taken away from you with something like this, I mean, can you just imagine, I mean, your whole sense of purpose gone. All the pluses in your life that, you know, you were proud of, gone. And now you have to publicly admit, whether you like it or not, as much as you would like to hide this, you have to publicly admit you are homeless. Okay. Otherwise, all these programs out there, well, most of these programs out there, they won't help you. You have to admit, okay, well, what job did you have? I mean, you'll at one time or another meet up with a social worker, and all these invasive questions, and it's pretty horrifying at first. I remember when I became homeless, my whole sense of privacy was gone.
Oh yeah.
And you have to admit this, you have to admit that, and you have to come to terms with, you know, with the problem. You're forced to, even in, you know, the public's eye. And then when I ended up at an unnamed shelter here in Spokane, met up with a social worker, and okay, you're talking to a veteran. Okay, I was in charge of I drove a nuclear submarine in our Navy, our nation's Navy. I had an awesome job, and consequently, this isn't why I became homeless. But I mean, you're talking about the pride of a veteran, which is there, and I don't like to admit that sometimes, but the pride's still there. And then
it should be there.
Well, and then modesty. I tell my kids modesty.
Modesty is a good thing, but I mean, I think as long as it's, you know, fairly moderate, pride is good too.
Yeah.
That is something to be proud of, and that is something, in my opinion.
Well, that being proud, you're on the streets. What happened? It's just that whole thing with having, you know, well, my life was there, and it just completely derailed. And then you get, you know, you get depression and all that. Anyways,
and it ends up feeling like they're asking you to point out every shortcoming and every personal, what you perceive as a personal failure in your life. And that is really hard for any one of us to just openly share.
I've gotten into many, many arguments with plenty of social workers. Now that I'm on the, you know, the other side of the tracks, I understand where they're coming from. But it is a scary situation, and I could appreciate the fact that most, not all of them, were very patient with me, and they were very understanding. They understood the idea that, you know, well, the reason why I was so, you know, defensive. I mean, who wants to know that information? I don't put any of that information online.
And, you know, another piece of that is, again, if you find yourself in a difficult situation where you're suffering from poverty, you're homeless, and you don't have a support system like we were talking about, those social workers become your support system. And the reason that someone like myself or many of us have support systems is because that support system is our family. It's our close friends. They know us. They accept us. They love us. They care for us. Now, if you don't have that and you don't have those people who already know you, then your support system, like I said, becomes those social workers. Those are the people who are going to help you find resources and you know, potentially help you out of this situation. And you have to open all of this stuff up to them and these are not people you know. They're not people who you care for and you know care for you. They're people who you feel are doing a job, and here you have to lay out everything on the table for them.
Yeah, so, okay, they're with you throughout the entire process. Well, maybe not, you know, the first few weeks, but denying what had happened keeps you where you are at, and it'll keep you where you are at for the longest time. The easiest thing to do is to accept what had happened. I mean, it does. It happens to the best of us. I mean, I've known people with, you know, a master's degree, you know, bachelor's degrees, you know, get thrown out on the streets for, you know, for many reasons, a myriad of reasons. Okay, let's go back to what we were saying. Another, you know, thing to expect when you become homeless is people telling you that you got to go back to school to improve your situation. Great. Okay, so you're homeless. You're on the streets. Or you're in a shelter. God forbid if they throw you out of the shelter because you didn't make it on time for their curfew, or you just didn't want to go to church that night, as they will make you go to church on a few institutions here, which personally I don't agree with. But anyway, you know, you can easily get thrown out. You can get scared from some of the people that live there. I know my time at the shelter, it was a scary situation being there the first night. They give you pajamas. You had to wear their pajamas. You had to be there at a certain time. I felt like I was back in grade school. But these adults, that you considered your peers at one time or put over you, it was really scary. You know, you hear all these scary stories of these, you know, people are killed and hurt, and granted, they do happen, but not so much. Consequently, what had happened at HOC the other day, I wanted to touch up on that. I know I don't want to, I hate derailing the subjects.
Right.
But what ended up happening at HOC was an individual, a client who was staying there, was, you know, it was heartbroken. I suppose from what I read, you know, his girlfriend had died, and you know, being sensitive to the situation. Okay, this is where, you know, social work becomes really, really important. He had the idea, from what I read on the news, of committing suicide by cop. And I would like to put out that this was not so much as a homeless problem, per se, but something happened there that someone dropped the ball, and this is what I believe, and did not catch the person in his mindset. And more times than none, I love that phrase, you know, you have people just, you know, oh, well, he's homeless. Okay, we'll leave him there.
And, you know, I think this would be a good time to also mention that when you find yourself previously successful, you know, had built a pretty secure, steady life for yourself, and you suddenly find yourself homeless, maybe not so suddenly, but one way or another it happens. You're now possibly living in a shelter. You have lost all of your worldly belongings. You may not have that support system we were talking about. What is one of the primary things that goes next, do you think? Because I'm thinking it's hope. I'm thinking that hope is very, very hard to come by in that situation. And depression is a very, very real illness.
No, I agree. Mental instability. I think that is one of the first few things to go. I mean, in this instance, with this individual that was, you know, that had did what he did, and his life is gone from us now. I think that whole issue, the mental instability, what would drive somebody to do that? And my heart goes out to his family. You know, my condolences to those who knew them or knew him. I've seen him around in Spokane. I will not name him, out of respect for the family. I believe that, you know, it is mental, you know, instability. I mean, what he was going through, I mean, you know, his belongings. I mean, you can only keep your belongings at anywhere for a short amount of time. And it's just, I don't know. I don't think I want to keep going about this, because I am not totally sure what else had happened. I read this on, you know, on the news, but, you know, the news websites, and, you know, granted, we all know that they're all correct all the time. And it is what it is. But yeah, mental instability is, yeah, it is one of the first few things to go. That's a tough subject to touch up on. I've had friends and family who've become homeless, and just to see their mind just, you know, going down the toilet, it's really difficult, especially when you start to, you know, start to think to yourself, well, you have all the resources to help them, but no, not really, no, you don't.
And another context to put this in is, for anyone out there who's maybe lost a loved one, and how that makes you feel, and you just, there are some days where it's so prominent in your mind that you literally just want to sit and cry all day with the blinds closed, just alone in your bed, maybe that's your comfort zone. And then if you find yourself homeless and having those feelings of depression, you don't have a comfort zone to go to. You don't have anywhere to hide that. You don't have anywhere to make you feel secure. And those, it can just snowball those feelings.
Now, what we're trying to do here is just give you an idea of what it's like. We're not trying to elicit any feelings. At least I'm not trying to, and I know Sarah's not trying to. But
it's a context conversation. Trying to put it into context, because again, like we said, it's very simple for us to, when we do talk about poverty, homelessness, death, we put it in the context of someone else. But if you can put it into a context where you can relate yourself to it on some level, it gives a better understanding that these are not all of the slanderous terms and opinions that you hear about people who are homeless may not actually be true.
No, we're talking about a human being or human beings. We're talking about somebody's son, someone's daughter, someone's grandson, granddaughter, nephew, niece, someone who was, you know, it was like you, and they're still like you. If you're just now tuning in, you're listening to KYRS 88.1 92.3 FM. This is The Science of Poverty, where we talk all things poverty, homelessness, and our vulnerable populations here in Spokane, Washington, and sometimes somewhere else. Yes, that's where your dial is at right now. You can change the dial or not. I know this subject is very difficult to talk about, even for me. I tell everyone that I come across, poverty and homelessness is, there are some hard truths to it. You see more times than none people going through it, and you know, you see people taking their lives. You see a whole bunch of things that I have a difficult time even announcing on the radio. I did say educating yourself out of poverty is difficult and long. Difficult in that, well, the process of going to school is not that easy. If you've never been, if you've never been at a post-educational institution, SEC, SFCC, or whatever, they will make you take a test to kind of ascertain where you're at in math and English and of such. And then you have to have so much amount of money to pay for that. And then you got to pick your programs. Help is there for you. I mean, you can talk to some of the counselors. Again, time is your enemy, especially when you're homeless. You got to deal with, oh, well, I have to be home at a certain time at the shelter. And if I'm not there, they'll throw me out. You have to deal with all this stuff. And then it's going to take a long time for that money. The Pell Grant, if that's what you're given, to come through. And once it comes through, a lot of money, but where does it go? You go to school.
It goes straight to the school.
Yeah.
And so now as a student, you're registered in classes. Okay. You're going to get a degree, whatever that degree may be. You're looking to, complete a higher level education, to possibly put yourself in a better position in the job market. But all of the money that you get from those grants, from that financial aid, that's going to your schooling. It's there to pay for your tuition, your books, and that sort of thing. So in the meantime, if you're going to school full time, where are you living? Again, those shelters, if there's only a finite period of time you can stay there, where are you living? How are you feeding yourself? How are you clothing yourself? Where are you showering?
I will tell you this right now. The first time that you pay tuition, you will be lucky if you see a dime of that. Okay. You're going to have to pay tuition, which is a lot of money. Okay. And I'm not going to quote any prices, but you're talking about 20,000, 25,000, maybe even less than that. I don't know, but that's in-state tuition. Then you got to pay for books. That's a funny thing, because you will never ever see a book priced about $600. I mean, the most expensive book that I've ever seen was, I believe it was a science textbook, Anatomy, for $1,000. Books are easily going to cost you a few months' rent anywhere that you stay. So you got books. Okay, and then if you're lucky, I mean, you wait everything out. And then third month, you start seeing, the Pell Grant coming back and helping you pay for. Is that how it works, Sarah?
No, it renews once a quarter. So if you're, and I'm just talking, of course, if you're receiving, if you're registered and taking classes at one of our Spokane community colleges, you, at the beginning of the every quarter, your financial aid comes through to pay your tuition, and hopefully you have enough left over to pay for books. That doesn't always happen. And that's it. And then when the next quarter starts, your financial aid comes through to pay for your tuition and hopefully the books, and that's it.
I was lucky. I was getting the GI Bill, and I mean, I was getting payments after the first month, which, consequently had, they gave me a lump sum of 2 months at first. So I had to wait on the third month to get anything. I got money, once every 2 months or whatever. I don't remember, but I was lucky. I was using that to live, and that, you know.
And there are, you know, even just through financial aid, there are other grants you can apply for. There are other scholarships you can apply for, but those all do take time, and they're no guarantee. And so in order to continue your financial aid and continue your education, you have to keep up a certain grade point average. Well, if you're sleeping in a shelter, maybe you're not even sleeping very well because you don't feel secure, you're not in your comfort zone. And if you're having difficulty feeding yourself 3 decent meals a day, that's going to make you more tired, drag more energy out of you. And keeping up your grades becomes very difficult when you feel like that.
Each time, well, for each person becoming homeless, it's a little different depending on where you're at, the resources available, what the school says you're able to take in as far as the Pell Grant. Everything's different for each person.
Well, and there is another option to take out student loans as well if you're attending school. But then as soon as your degree is completed, it's intended that you will have a job and you will start paying back those loans within 6 months. You have a total of 6 months to find a job and start paying those loans back. So for a lot of people, like I'll tell you right now, for me, that's not an option. I don't want to find myself thousands and thousands of dollars in debt just to get an education that I hope will support me.
That's money you can use to get a house or get an apartment.
It is.
I mean, it.
If worse comes to worse. But like I said, it just depends on where you're at, what you need, and what your expectations are going to be for your future.
All right. So, okay, educating yourself out of poverty is difficult and long. It's a long-term thing. And, you know, to be honest with you, a lot of people coming out of school or post-education, it is difficult for them to even find a job as well.
It's not impossible to bring yourself. None of these things are impossible. You know, getting a job won't save you from being homeless. It's not impossible, but it is extremely difficult. And when you hear someone saying, "Oh, just go get a job," or "Oh, go back to school," that's the idea of this conversation. Is just it is not that easy.
We also touched up on government benefits. They're not much help. As far as EBT, SNAP benefits, I know that we got to be very careful with DSHS, the benefits. I will tell you right now, the benefits may differ for each person. But at the time that I was homeless, for each, for one person, we were getting $189 in SNAP benefits. I don't like saying welfare. I hate saying welfare. It's such an antiquated term. Food stamps, antiquated.
Yeah, they're a little, one thing, I love the word welfare. I love that word.
Oh, yeah.
I do. I think it encompasses so many things, and it is such a positive thing, really. Huh. But because of our perception of welfare programs, it's become a very negative thing, and I really wish it hadn't, because the term by itself, without that relation to what, our pop culture view of someone on welfare, the word itself, the term itself, I think is a very positive one.
Yeah, well, it very may well be.
Yeah, I wish it didn't have that negative.
I think
association.
I think a lot of people out there who who tag the negative to this term. Brings it down and does a disservice to everyone. But nevertheless, I don't like it only because of that. I mean, yeah. I will agree with you on that.
Yeah.
You warned me last Saturday that we, I think it was last Saturday, that we have some things that we don't agree on. And I looked at you and said, "Oh, really?"
Well, yeah. Well, and it's just those different ways we look at things. It's not anything to argue about. And
no, certainly not. I'm right.
I feel like
I'm right. You're wrong.
of course. But yeah, that's one of those things. That just the term itself. I love the word itself. I think it's a fantastic word, and we should all be looking out for our welfare and each other's welfare.
All right, all right. If you're just now tuning in, you are listening to KYRS 88.1, 92.3 FM. You've been listening to The Science of Poverty, where we talk all things poverty, homelessness, and our vulnerable populations here in Spokane, Washington, and sometimes everywhere else. Yes, that's where your dial has been, and I kind of like that term. I'm going to write that in the litany. That's where your dial has been. Today, we're talking about what happens, what really happens when you become homeless or, you know, you start living on the streets. We're just now touching up on the subject, and oh, gosh, our time is just going by fast. When we discuss the subject, I thought we didn't have enough material for an hour, and I'm starting to think maybe, yeah, I need to, yes.
We'll always have enough for an hour.
All right, real quick, I'm going to run down this. I'm going to skip a few things. Shelters are a Band-Aid. What to expect there? Shelters. Such a word. Shelters are designed, well, the shelters that we have here, HOC, and you got UGM, and you got the woman's transitional house. It's all transitional. Okay, most of them is transitional. And transitional, if I remember right, and I will verify this and put out again on our website on kyrs.org, under shows, under The Science of Poverty. Transitional, if I do remember right, is 90 days. So you have 90 days to get your act together. Most of these shelters don't require much of you. They have a curfew. They require you to shower. One particular shelter requires you to go to church at 7 o'clock. Whether you believe in what they believe or not, they still require you to go to church. They can do that. It's a faith-based institution. Yes. And anyways, let me get away from that. they require you a chore. And yeah, they call it a chore. And you know what? It keeps you busy. You know, it's a 2-hour chore throughout the day. Most of these, shelters, they will feed you. They have staff on hand, people that you can go and talk to. And these are the positives for it. The thing that I have with shelters, okay, is they are pretty much cookie cutter. And if you don't fall within their limited scope of what poverty is or homelessness is, more times than none, you will be left out. So again, we shall go to your term that you like, having a very good support system. That's the only way, and I'm starting to believe this is one of the only ways that you can get out of your situation is your support system. People knowing who you are, what you are about, just supporting you, emotionally, sometimes, physically, if it's a disability, helping you, sign things out, helping you get a cell phone. Touch up on this real quick. When you become homeless, there are a few things that you absolutely need to get back on your feet. You have to have your ID, your wallet. Okay, and you have to have a cell phone, a means of communicating. Okay, and I hear a lot of people out there, well, he has a cell phone. Why is he homeless? He can pay for that. Okay, well, granted, I mean, I understand that concern, but there are a lot of places out there who give free cell phones just for the very fact to help them out.
And when you're going to apply for a job, if you're living in a shelter, you don't have an address. You can give them, many of the shelters will allow you to give your their phone number, and they'll take a message and you can call back. But if you're trying to get a job, those first impressions mean the world as to whether or not a person is going to hire you. And if they are looking to hire you and they have no way to contact you, and you give them a number to a shelter and go, oh, well, you can leave a message and I'll call you back. While it shouldn't be a very negative thing, it is.
It's an unsaid justice. Injustice, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I can hear people out there saying right now, well, they can't do that. That's illegal. Of course it's illegal. It's discrimination. But it happens. It happens. And, I mean, you can't change somebody's body. You can't change somebody who they are and what they are, what they're about. You can't change their whole idea about what poverty or homelessness is all about.
And unfortunately, from a business standpoint, they look at it as that person may not end up being the most reliable person out of all of these people that we can choose. So if we hire them, where might that put us in a couple months if they cannot be reliable?
So the mistreatment starts coming in. Okay. You'll start to see the mistreatment from family, friends, you know, people that you thought were going to be there, you know, 100% have your back, your best friend gone. And I, as bad as that sounds, I see this a lot. The first thing that they're thinking in your mind is they're going to want to ask to see if I can stay there with them. I don't want to deal with it. They're going to ask for money. I have my own problems. That's the first thing that goes through anyone's mind is their priorities. I mean, that's what our culture is all about. Me, 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 me. And I'm not saying that's bad. Don't take me wrong. I'm not saying that's bad. I do tell people just have your healthy boundaries and stuff like that. And if you are ever, you know, put in a situation like, well, you know, somebody wants to come in and ask for money or whatever, I mean, state your boundaries. And, you know, I mean, if you can't give money, if you can't help them out with shelter, certainly, I mean, an hour on the computer or, oh, I'll look this up. Yeah, you can use my phone or, you know, I mean, if it's family and friends, you know, if you need a shower, dude, just come on in. And yes, I said dude on the air. Hey, come on in, you know, take a shower, you know, do the human being thing. I mean, this whole me, me, me thing, it doesn't work for anyone. It hurts people.
You know, many, many years ago, a couple hundred years ago in America, we had communities and communities that took care of each other. And of course, all of the effort that your community would put into you had a lot to do with how much you put into your community. And what a wonderful idea. And unfortunately, in our society today, as Americans, the only time we really see that sort of community support, I shouldn't say the only time, but the primary time, is within a congregation, within your church. There is still a lot of support there, but because Americans are Americans, what happened with the whole community thing is eventually we ended up you know, taking this idea of community and support. And you know what happened next was the creation of things like company stores. And we seriously exploited the idea to such an extent that we just don't help each other anymore outside of family. So that's another issue too, is if you don't have any family, if you don't have any close friends, you know, if you're not a member of a church, then finding that support system is really, really very difficult.
You will find what we've been talking about. You will substantiate this. If, hopefully, God forbid, you become homeless, you will find what we've been talking about. You will find the scary truth in it. I will tell you right now, the world is not ending for you. And I tell everyone this. I've told people who have worked for me, my volunteers, if it does happen to you, it is not the world ending for you. I mean, you have some good people out there, some great individuals out there who, yeah, who've hit, you know, rock bottom. And I mean, they come back from this. That's what we are about. I mean, we're human beings.
Absolutely. And you know, while we're talking, because we're running short on time, while we're talking about great individuals, I also would like to mention some information for you about a couple great organizations in the area that should you find yourself in a position where you're looking for employment or just looking for a little help. I want to mention, and most of these we've actually mentioned on air before, which is why these particular ones, I just wanted to throw a little information out there. So the first one, of course, if you are homeless, you don't have money to even feed yourself, we've mentioned Second Harvest Food Bank. I love their slogan, Fighting Hunger, Feeding Hope, since 1971. I love them, yeah. So much. I'm going to give you their website information. It's the numeral 2, so the number 2, not the word spelled out, -harvest.org. Their office is located at 1234 East Front Avenue here in Spokane, and their phone number is 509 334-6678. Now, another great resource I'd like to give you a little information on is a website for DSHS. If you're looking for food benefits, cash services, you know, Washington Apple health plans, child care subsidy programs, long-term care services, you go to their website, which is washingtonconnection.org, and you'll find a lot of information for them there. Now, their physical address also, I have that here, is 1313 North Maple Street here in Spokane. And that's another great resource if you're looking for any benefits that you might qualify. Now, two more that I'm going to mention. I won't throw all of their information out there, but if you're looking for employment, please, please look into these options. We have talked about, of course, WorkSource. Before.
Oh, I love WorkSource.
WorkSource, they're amazing, super easy to find their contact information. They have so many resources and so many things to help a person find a job. They help with resumes, they help with the actual job search itself, they'll do mock interviews with you. But another one I want to mention is Artisans. This one, it's a nonprofit agency that provides employment services, so employment support, opportunities, job development for people with disabilities.
Way to go, Artisans.
They're amazing. I actually got to visit them not long ago, and the work they do is just outstanding. We need them in our community. I'm so thankful for them. But if you're looking for a job and you do have disabilities, developmental or physical disabilities that are make it a real challenge for you to find a job, Artisans, just Spokane Artisans. I think their website is The Artisans, so theartisans.org.
I'm going to put out real quick, we're not advertising. This is just we are telling you about resources. The amazing resources. And if it's a good resource, definitely, we're all for resources.
We have resources in our community, and we want to make sure as members of our community that our listeners are aware of these. And my very last one that I'm going to share with you today, because I personally think it is one of the best resources we have in Spokane, and one of the least talked about, is our Spokane public libraries.
Yes.
Because all of these websites I've been saying, or all of these organizations we've mentioned in the past but we haven't given the full contact information for, you can go to one of our free public libraries, use a computer for free, a librarian will help you find that information. A lot of these services you can apply for online. So Spokane Public Libraries, the general hours are about 10 a.m. till 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. There are weekend hours, I know, at the Shadle Branch, both Saturday and Sunday, and some later evening hours, even until 8 p.m. a couple days of the week up there, too.
And real quick, if you want to donate your time, money, or whatever, I mean, find a place like this. I always push this. One of the single items that are never, ever given to, you know, charities, feminine products, women's feminine products. And it's just, it's something that no one thinks about. And I've been told that they're very expensive. I've never bought them myself, but they're very expensive.
They are.
And, you know, this, yes.
But do you know what the most expensive item you can donate is?
What?
Your time.
There you go. Awesome.
Find something. If you find something you're passionate about, if you hear something, even whether it's on air with us or elsewhere, that you feel like is something you might want to get involved with, reach out to them. Look into volunteering opportunities.
Well, we have a special guest real quick for us here in the studio. This is my daughter.
Hi.
This is Olivia, and I've brought her in here so she could learn, you know, what Daddy does here, and we've been teaching her what homelessness and poverty is all about. So, and she tells me that, you know, the students, her classmates, don't believe her. So, say again, hi.
Hi, guys.
So that's my daughter, and also I want to do a shout out to Jasmine, a good friend of mine who's going through a tough time. You will get through it again with a very good support system. So without further ado, it is 4:52, and it is time to sign off.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for listening. And I hope some of this information has been useful.
Oh, yes. Go ahead, Via.
Bye.
Okay. Well, you've been listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane 88.1 92.3 FM. You've been listening to The Science of Poverty, where we talk all things poverty, homelessness, and our vulnerable populations here in Spokane, Washington, and sometimes everywhere else.
Thanks for joining.
I lost my job.
Where can I sleep?
Why is this happening to me?
I have nowhere to go.
How will we pay rent?
This is The Science of Poverty, every Saturday, 4 to 5 p.m., here on KYRS, Medical Lake, Spokane, 88.1, 92.3 FM.